Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who really do believe that they, as well as the rest of us, are the nation, and that speaking out for what we believe to be true is the one and only path we can take. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is family versus school, teaching appropriate behaviors. All of us were taught, growing up, by our parents that certain actions, modes of speech, manners of dress, forms of interacting with people were appropriate under specific circumstances and inappropriate under others. The behaviors you indulge in with the rest of the kids playing hide-and-seek at 5 and 6 years old are not the same behaviors you're expected to indulge in a classroom when you enter kindergarten or first grade. Likewise, the behaviors that adults exhibit in purely same-sex company, women dishing the dirt over the teacups, although they don't do that anymore over teacups, and men in the locker room at a sporting event, and the language that flies about, both groups of people usually are taught by the time they reach adulthood that such behaviors are only appropriate in those ambiances. They are not appropriate in one's minister's living room or in a job interview. More and more, our children are being given to the public school system with little or no training in the concept of appropriate behavior. Thanks to the overzealous efforts of the medical and psychiatric professions and the psychologists, behavioral disabilities have become the new term for spoiled bratism. There are behavioral disabilities, ladies and gentlemen. Usually they are tied to specific physical disabilities that cause them. Tourette's syndrome, for example, is a neurological condition that basically eliminates the breaks between brain and tongue. And people with Tourette's often utter profanities or inappropriate statements simply because they truly cannot help it. The neurological mechanism that allows us to think before we speak doesn't always reliably work for a person who suffers from Tourette's. But the vast majority of children who cannot refrain from using profanity or crude language to adults in a school situation do not suffer from Tourette's. They suffer from spoiled bratism, which syndrome, if you will, is not specifically recognized by the Americans with Disabilities Act as it pertains to education. It's lumped in under behavioral disabilities. The disability part is a buzzword for extremely poor home discipline and training. There is a role in both the school system and the family for teaching appropriate behavior. Families, parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, older cousins, adults who surround children, should and usually do indicate to the child when his or her behavior is not appropriate for the situation in which they find themselves. Teachers also are required to indicate to their students when their behavior is inappropriate in the classroom. But unfortunately, because of the incredibly broad application of the ADA as it pertains to education, this method of teaching children how to become functioning adults in a widely varied society is being set by the wayside under the guise of, oh, be yourself at wherever you are, because everybody will adapt to you and just accept you for who you are. Well, I was not taught that way. I was taught that being polite, being courteous, using the magic words please and thank you, saying excuse me under appropriate conditions, were the hallmarks of a young lady or a young gentleman. And being a young lady or a young gentleman was a very positive goal, something that my sisters and I were expected to aspire to, and if we were diligent, achieve. Somehow or other, the idea of being a lady or a gentleman has been morphed by progressive thinking into, if you're a lady or a gentleman, you are disrespecting yourself, and everybody should be made to adapt to you with however you want to behave, because you are so special. Part of what I do every single day, most of what I do, is deal with children who cannot understand that rules apply to them. They also have no off button between brain and mouth that allows them to think before they speak. My friend Linda in the chat room said that in school she had a posture and an etiquette class. She's not alone. So did I. I remember in our English books, good old Warner's English Grammar, from fifth grade on up, there was always a section in the textbook on the proper forms of address, proper expressions to use in social situations. And that chapter was dealt with just as much as grammar and mechanics of English. Maybe that's the reason that manners and good behavior and appropriate actions under appropriate circumstances have gone by the wayside, because our kids aren't taught grammar anymore either. I had a seventh grader who was totally baffled by the idea of a direct object this week. He had no clue what one was. His manners, however, were pretty good. So I don't think that the analogy of not teaching grammar goes along with not having an understanding of appropriate behavior. But I do think that the underlying reason that we don't teach grammar is also a corollary to the underlying reason so many children do not understand how to behave in many situations. We delight in our freedoms, ladies and gentlemen, especially our freedom of speech. But liberal progressives have taken the innate freedom implied there and turned it into license. The difference between freedom and license, ladies and gentlemen, has become incredibly blurred. License means permission to do whatever you choose to do. Freedom is the opportunity to make your own choices and deal with the consequences thereof yourself. Two very different concepts. But because progressive liberal education defines freedom as license, we have children like the young lady whom I had in ISS again today for violation of the dress code. Our children at the middle school where I teach are not permitted to wear flip-flop shoes to school. It's a safety issue because middle school students tend to be somewhat clumsy. They push, they shove, they step on each other. And flip-flop shoes are very easy to dislodge, causing a fall which could not only injure the student wearing them, but in the process of falling downstairs, injure several other people as well. There is a reason why they are not permitted to wear them. But this young lady, who also blatantly uses a cell phone when she knows darn good and well that you're not allowed to use it or have it turned on during school, whenever she feels like it, walking down the halls. She also says, no, I don't think I want to do this work because I don't like it. Her attitude toward life is, how many boys can she fascinate? And how provocatively can she dress and still manage to squeak by? She is not stupid. It's just that her brain doesn't function as well as her hormones do. And because she lives in a society where freedom and license are confused, she has grown up with the idea that her freedom to be herself includes disrupting, offending, and otherwise creating problems for everyone around her. The rules of my classroom include one that is very, very difficult for my students to adhere to for longer than 25 seconds. It is a very simple two-word rule. No talking. This is the most difficult task they face in my classroom. Literally, if I get 10 minutes of silent, independent work out of every hour, I consider it to have been an excellent day, especially when I have more than two or three students in the room. Every morning I go over the ISS rules. Very straightforward, very simple, no talking, all work given to you is required work, your teacher work takes priority, if you finish it I will give you additional work, which you must also do. All work will be turned into your teachers. Raise your hand if you wish to ask a question, request a visit to the bathroom or to the clinic, or need help with your work. Remain in your assigned seat, and if you are asked to change seats, please do so quickly and courteously. You would think that that was fairly understandable English for 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. But within 20 minutes of the start of the day, somebody is always going to talk out without bothering to raise their hand. As a species, ladies and gentlemen, human beings are still in existence because we can adapt. My friend Yolanda and I were talking tonight about the possibilities of thunderstorms hitting my area from Tropical Storm Andrea working her way up the coast, and that man proposes, but God disposes. And sometimes we have to adapt to situations that are out of our control, like thunderstorms or hurricanes or tornadoes or floods or snowstorms or a lot of the other things that the weather gods and goddesses or the Almighty or Mother Earth, whichever one you want to blame or praise for it, creates for us. But our children are not being taught this essential survival skill in something as simple as how do you behave well, in every situation. When I was in the grade level of what is now called middle school, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, our teachers did not have to spend 20 minutes of the class hour trying to get the students to shut up long enough to hear the day's assignment. That is not the case today. And I am fortunate in that I work in a school in a rural county. I do not have to deal with the dangerous, violent, drug-infested attitudes of inner-city schools, or even the my sneakers cost more than yours did wealth flaunting of affluent suburban schools. Our kids are pretty level-headed for 12, 13, and 14-year-olds, which isn't saying very much. It's not that I expect them to be polished diplomats, ladies and gentlemen, although some of them would do a better job than our current crop. The idea that Susan Rice is going to be UN ambassador and or is going to be national security advisor to the current president, well, of course, it really shouldn't surprise us because he likes yes men and yes women, and that apparently is what she is, given her ridiculous explanation for the horrible tragedy in Benghazi. But the concept that you don't behave in a classroom the way you behave with your friends in a pickup basketball game or at McDonald's with a bunch of your other friends talking about which boy you like the best doesn't seem to penetrate. I know teachers who don't set the standards highly enough for behaviors in their classroom. They're so anxious to be friends with their students that they act like they're 13 too. And yes, I've seen that happen. When that happens, the school's part in teaching appropriate behavior goes south. The school and the family both play a part in teaching appropriate behaviors. There are certain behaviors that the family has got to inculcate before the child starts school. Children need to understand that school is not the same as playing in the backyard with your dog. School is not the same as sitting in the living room with mommy and daddy, playing a guessing game, or playing with your brothers and sisters, or punching your brother because he took something of yours, or just because you're mad at him at the current moment. Early childhood training, inappropriate behavior that 5- and 6-year-olds are capable of matching is essential. Once they get to school, teachers are responsible for setting the behavioral standards in their classrooms. Those behavioral standards are supposed to be ones which are conducive to a good learning environment. A good learning environment is not a classroom in which everyone is talking to everybody else about anything but the classwork, and the teacher is standing there seething because she can't get them quiet enough to listen to what their assignment is. It has to be a cooperative effort. I posted a lead-in for tonight's show on Facebook on the Patriot Families page, and a gentleman made a comment that family is always better, and that's a good reason for homeschooling. And he's correct in one sense. If you homeschool your children, they are not going to be exposed to the disruptive and antisocial behaviors of those who have not been taught to be polite. But it also doesn't teach them how to be able to still behave well in a climate where many people don't. One of the most difficult things to deal with the age group that I teach, is that they are pack animals. It is definitely monkey see, monkey do. I have said for over 40 years that any two teenagers, young teenagers, middle schoolers, are absolutely delightful, charming, interesting, nice, sweet. Three or more become a mob. And that holds true wherever you are. Middle school children are immature, obviously. They are trying to find their social feet away from mom and dad's watchful eye. they are trying to fit in to a group orientation, to have the cover, to learn to be able to stand alone and like who they are. Middle schoolers derive their self-image and sense of self-worth from the adulation or criticism of their peers, which is one of the reasons there have been so many reported incidences of cyberbullying and in-school bullying leading to suicide or suicide attempts. These children are fairly fragile in many ways. They don't act fragile. They're loud, they're abrasive, they're clumsy, like a basketful of half-grown puppies. But to use the pack analogy again, a half-grown puppy, a six-month-old puppy, has all the capabilities of a grown dog as far as their physical ability goes, just like the middle school kids. But a half-grown puppy is still growing. At 6 months old, a dog is not mature. You can begin to give them obedience training, but they're going to have lapses because they are still puppies. And part of puppyhood is learning the play behavior that later translates into hunting behavior. I am not trying to imply that human beings are no more than animals. We are animals, but we are something more. As the rabbi explained on Glenn Beck's show last week, the Hebrew symbol for human and the Hebrew symbol for animal are almost identical, but the symbol for human has one additional line, that piece of God that is in each one of us that we call cognitive reasoning ability. But the glyph, the Hebrew sign for human, is an adult human. If you believe the creation story of Adam and Eve, they were created as adults, not children, in the sense of immature thinking ability with mature bodies. Our kids don't come directly from God the way Adam and Eve did as mature adults. They have to strive to get there. And they can't get there without help. They need both the family and the school to give them guidelines. Guidelines that let them understand that there are certain behaviors that are appropriate everywhere. And there are other behaviors that are only appropriate in certain restricted situations. We all know that Las Vegas comedians lard their acts, their lounge acts, with an obscenity every fourth word. And people in the audience laugh uproariously and have a great time, the adults who are allowed in, because they are adults. And they know that if they talk to their boss in the style that the comedian does, that they soon would be unemployed and couldn't afford to go to Vegas and watch a comedian in a lounge act. They also know when they play handball at the gym and get together in the locker room and take a shower afterwards, the kind of language and discussions that go on are all not necessarily the same ones that they should have with the minister who is counseling them and their fiancé before getting married. Our kids haven't grown up yet. They can't make those kinds of judgments unless we give them, good old, behavioral standards to use as a measuring stick and as a comparison. One of the purposes of my job is to try to do that for these kids. In school suspension, which is what I'm in charge of, is supposed to be the step before out of school suspension and expulsion from school. It is supposed to be an opportunity for the children to demonstrate that they can abide by appropriate rules. They do understand that it is better to think before you speak. The rules are strict because it is not supposed to be play in there. The fact that having to raise your hand before you speak and not get up and wander around at will and not talk out whenever you feel like it is considered punishment is really a little bit horrifying because that used to be the norm in the classroom when I was in school. But this is the way today's kids see it, and this is the way today's administrations and educational theorists and liberal progressives see it. It is an evil, horrible, wicked punishment to children to actually require them to behave responsibly. Is it any wonder that 80% of the kids that I have tell me that they don't really like it in ISS, but in a way they do because they get their work done? And I have some who actually ask their teachers, can you send me to ISS all the time, please? If nothing else, that should tell us that we have got a fundamental disconnect between parents and children and teachers and children. Our teachers are being told that they are not allowed to exercise discipline in the classroom unless every disciplinary action is thoroughly examined and vetted by the guidance department, the special education teacher, the principal, the assistant principal, the school psychologist, the school superintendent's behavioral guidelines, the school board's idea of what's proper. Because if they don't stay within very strict guidelines, they don't have a job. Well, these very strict guidelines mean that children who have quote-unquote behavioral disabilities are given the privilege of acting disruptive because, quote-unquote, they can't help it. But other children who do not have these problems are expected to adhere to appropriate behavior norms. All right, now, you take immature 12, 13, and 14-year-olds, and you put them in a group with a bunch of people who can act any way they want because they can't help it. And you take those immature 12, 13, and 14-year-olds, and you try to explain to them why they have to meet different standards than this other kid who looks exactly like them doesn't. My friend Rod asked, does that include teaching children that the Muslim religion is acceptable? Of course it does, because we live in a nation in which freedom of religion is one of our fundamental truths. It does not mean, however, that one religion should be taught as more acceptable than another, no matter what one's personal feelings are. Children should get their religious instruction at home, not from public education. Many parents teach discipline, morality, and ethics based upon their religious convictions. This is fine. They have that right because their children belong to them, not to the state. And as much as we dislike certain aspects of certain belief systems, we must permit those belief systems to be expressed. Where we make our mistake in the current situation is that we subliminally promote one belief system over another by not giving equal time and equal tolerance to all religions. I have no objections, ladies and gentlemen, to having a moment of silence in school. Our school does that every morning, immediately after the Pledge of Allegiance. I think this is a very appropriate way for children to have at least 1 minute or so to not talk and to, if they choose, reach out to whatever spiritual being they believe in. I do not believe that there is anything exclusive about the term God. It's a perfectly acceptable term used for many centuries in the English language to refer to a supreme being or a guiding spiritual presence. It does not indicate which God, or only one, or six, or two, or my God versus your God. It merely acknowledges, linguistically, that many people believe in a supreme being. And showing respect for another's religion is part of appropriate behavior. I do not permit my students to cast aspersions on any belief system. I do not encourage religious or spiritual discussions. The reason I do not do this is because I am dealing with immature people. People who are not yet adults and who cannot think for themselves and make value judgments of their own. My friend Rod has said, how can he respect anyone who believes they have a right to kill me if I don't think the same way they do? You can't. But that does not mean that you cannot respect someone who does not espouse that aspect of the belief system, and there are many who do not. Appropriate behavior and freedom of speech are not mutually exclusive. Appropriate behavior and freedom of religion are not mutually exclusive. You may disagree with what I say, but you should defend to the death my right to say it. If I attack you or threaten you, you have a perfect right to self-defense. Whatever my reason may be, I have no right to attack you unless you have attacked me first. Appropriate behavior doesn't mean political correctness, ladies and gentlemen. Political correctness is the antithesis of appropriate behavior. Political correctness assumes that there is no right or wrong. There is only difference. Only communication we do not understand. Appropriate behavior merely shows one's self-respect by the way in which one shows respect for others. If someone's belief system or attitudes or political beliefs displease you, you can always say, I beg to disagree, and walk away. As an adult, you have the life experience and the training and the fortitude to do such. As a middle schooler, 12, 13, 14-year-old, you don't have those things. Because everything is now. Everything is immediate. Everything is a personal attack. Everything, no matter what it is. We had a situation today where a youngster who is incredibly disruptive, very badly behaved, has been given a new behavioral improvement plan where if he acts up in class, he is to be immediately sent to ISS to remain until the end of the period to teach him that he cannot behave that way, and then he goes back to class. Well, since that's been put in place, he's been in ISS every single day, from once to three times. The behavioral improvement plan is not effective so far. Unfortunately, because many of his behaviors include making faces and obscene gestures in front of other children when he thinks I'm not looking, I have to deal with his disruptive effect on the students who hitherto had been behaving well. So again, because, quote-unquote, he can't help it, children who ordinarily are reasonably well-behaved for their age start acting like idiots. And this is exactly what the child wants. And they are not mature enough to understand that when they respond, they are enabling the bad behavior and rewarding it because this child is getting exactly what he wants. That's why he does his behaviors, to get the attention of everyone around him and have everything focused on him. So, the children who are trying to do well are being deprived of their opportunity to do their work in order to attempt to reform behaviors in a child, in a classroom, that should have been addressed at home before he even got into the school building. There is no follow-up at home. There is no punishment at home for misbehavior at school, apparently. There is only, oh, okay. I see this over and over and over again. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about children. Not fully functional, reasoning adults with life experience, with the ability to understand, I can walk away. We're talking about kids who have no clue that they can ignore such things, because it certainly is not going to harm them any. The old saying of sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me, has gotten turned on its ear, because we hear more and more about how unjust and undeserved words cause suicides. Well, no, they don't. What causes suicides are very fragile young egos that, for whatever reason, do not have the kind of home support that would armor them against the stupid behaviors of kids. Every single one of you here tonight in the chat room and listening over the air, if you've managed to make adulthood without a jail term, then you've been subjected to stupid, dumb, taunting, provocative behavior by some kid at some point in your childhood. Every single one of us has. But because most of us had a strong support group at home, we learned to ignore it and consider the source. We weren't told, he can't help it, he has a behavioral disability. We were told, if you ignore him, he'll stop because he wants to see you angry. And it was reinforced. Appropriate behavior is not just please and thank you, yes ma'am, no ma'am, excuse me, you're welcome. Appropriate behavior is understanding that you are responsible for what you do and what you say. And if you do not wish to create problems for yourself, you will think before you speak and abide by the rules or behavioral norms of whatever situation you're in. The need for attention has become an epidemic, ladies and gentlemen. Me, 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 focus on me, focus on me. All you have to do is watch a bunch of kids under the age of 20, and many of them over, sitting somewhere, texting for hours on end. Or people on Twitter or Facebook who give you a tweet or a Facebook post that they're putting on their left sock or brushing their teeth or combing their hair or just took a shower or ate hot dogs for lunch. Because obviously the entire world must be incredibly fascinated with the minutiae of their lives. We have made a fetish of inappropriate behavior. We have opened the door to a chaotic society in which the idea of self-respect being evident in the respect one shows for others is old-fashioned, stupid, and probably not psychologically healthy. And we see it in our public schools. Many of the teachers with whom I work are strict disciplinarians with their own children. And they would really like to be strict disciplinarians in the classroom so that they could do their job and fulfill their passion of disseminating knowledge to young minds. But because so many children are permitted, and even sometimes encouraged, to behave abominably with no consequences, they have no recourse. They can write a referral, they can call a parent, but as soon as the parent starts mouthing the words lawyer, because we are poisoning everybody's mind against my poor dear child, immediately everybody backs off and the child behaves continually abominably. I've often said on this program and in my classroom, the only person in your life over whom you have 100% control is yourself. We used to make self-control a virtue. Not to the point of being so Vulcan that you can't smile, but understanding that it wasn't appropriate to laugh when somebody fell downstairs and died of a concussion. We used to teach our children that being able to control oneself and act appropriately was a positive thing, something that was necessary to lead a good moral life, and that being themselves didn't mean acting like a jerk wherever they were just to prove that they could. I was encouraged to be myself. Truly, I was. You probably can tell. What you see is what you get. But I was also encouraged to treat people courteously and generally to seek the society of those who also behaved courteously. Not necessarily the society of only those people who agreed with me, because that would have limited my ability to learn about things that were different from the things that I knew. But to surround myself with friends and acquaintances who held the same standards of appropriate behavior that I did. I had no interest in hanging out with the kids who thought it was cool to drink and smoke when they were 13, because that wasn't an appropriate age to do those things. And I wasn't a goody-two-shoes, in the sense of, you know, so mealy-mouthed that I wouldn't say boo if somebody scared me. But I was taught that if I respected myself, I would choose my friends wisely. I would choose people that I would be proud to know. My friend Rod said there's too much self being displayed for children to see, is the example, and he is correct. That's the culture we have. So, where do we go? How do we fix this? We start with the children that we personally interact with. Neighbors' kids, the paper boy, nieces, nephews, grandchildren, our own children, neighbors' children. And we gently but firmly indicate to them that if they are behaving inappropriately, they are behaving inappropriately. And that if their parents have a problem with us pointing this out, we will be happy to discuss it with their parents. We never shout, we never scream, we never, you know, use pejorative terms. We merely say, this is not appropriate behavior. If you wish to stay here, you may not behave that way. That's the way I deal with my grandchildren. With the full backing of their parents, by the way. That's the way I deal with most of my students. Sometimes I have to raise my voice. I don't like to do it, but sometimes I do. But my students know that every time I raise my voice, that's 5 minutes off their free talk time at the end of the day. And they're remarkably astute when they realize that pushing me to that point means they are going to lose something that they value. If we as adults do our duty to educate the children with whom we come in contact, not by browbeating them, not by whipping them, not by smacking them, but merely by indicating to them that if a behavior is inappropriate, it isn't amusing and it isn't acceptable. We can go a long way because children do mimic the actions of the adults they see. many, many years ago, when I was a child walking my pet saber-toothed tiger down the country lane in the tropical rainforest in Michigan, if I behaved inappropriately at a neighbor's house when playing with their children, my parents heard about it immediately. And I definitely got a consequence when I got home. And my parents apologized to the parent of the other child for my inappropriate behavior and embarrassed the you-know-what out of me. So I soon learned that to behave inappropriately at a friend's house got me in so much trouble that I'd better start paying attention to what I was doing. It didn't take very many experiences of that to make me a welcome guest in my friends' homes. My friend Rod is talking about the government having so much control over how we raise our kids, and he's right. All you have to do is think about that idiot commentator talking about the fact that your children don't belong to you, they belong to the state. My friend Linda said that all of us got that kind of a cure. We did. Those of us who are in above the age of 45 at least did. And it didn't harm us. I am not a shrinking violet who's afraid to give her opinion. Obviously not. I'm standing here telling the entire world what I think. I have no problem meeting people and discussing ideas and concepts and events, enjoying their company, enjoying our differences without becoming angry or abrasive or unkind or rude or crude. I wasn't turned into some horrible, deformed serial killer because I was disciplined. Nor did I become totally incapable of opening my mouth in a public situation, or incapable of introducing myself to someone, or presenting myself well when I need to be center stage, such as in a job interview or at the head of a classroom. It did not harm me in any way. It gave me an understanding that what I did and what I said had consequences, and that I needed to accept the consequences of my own speech and actions without whining, without complaining to the government, and without suing someone because, quote unquote, I couldn't help it, or, quote unquote, it wasn't my fault. Generally, I've found that what I say and what I do usually is my fault, because I'm the one who decides to say and do it. And yes, I've gotten myself called on the carpet for speaking my mind in a way that superiors considered too freely. And I have stood by my convictions. And most of the time, the consequences have been a momentary coldness and not particularly serious. There have been consequences that were serious. But that was a consequence of what I did and what I said. And I don't whine about it, and I don't blame somebody else for it, and I certainly don't call the government and sue somebody. I am an adult woman. I have a functioning brain. I don't suffer from any sort of disability that makes me incapable of rational thought. Therefore, I must take the consequences of what I do and say. Because I talk about conservative and libertarian issues, I may very well be audited by the IRS, or maybe not, since they supposedly are going to clean house. But if I am, I am. Good luck, IRS, okay? I haven't got any secret bank accounts in the Caymans. Come and look at my house. I think you'll figure out that I'm not stashing away money to live in a palace, all right? But anyhow, I was also taught that honesty truly is the best policy, because once you tell a lie, you got to think of at least 30 or 40 more of them to support the first one, and sooner or later, the whole house of cards is going to fall down and you're going to get caught red-handed. And being a practical woman, it makes much better sense to tell the truth. Also, because I do tell the truth, I know that when I say something contrary to someone else's testimony in a given situation, that it's likely I will be believed, because I have built my reputation on the truth. My friend Linda says, yeah, they'll clean house in the IRS. Today we can ice skate in hell. And she's right there. Government bureaucracies and government agencies aren't accountable to anybody, because the career bureaucrats don't come and go with administrations. They stay put, and they basically run the place. It's only when you get a dictator in the Oval Office who appoints many dictators as his minions that they go beyond the bounds of common sense and then discover that their jobs are in jeopardy and blow the whistle. Most of us don't like being blamed for things that we were told to do by someone who is superior to us in the chain of command. Most of us, I hope, try to live lives of integrity and try to teach our children integrity. Not just integrity of our word, our given word, but integrity of our behaviors, our manners, our ability to adapt to different situations. Many people believe that teaching manners and courtesy and respectful behavior is old-fashioned and limiting to the freedom of being yourself. But teaching good manners and what's appropriate when is part and parcel of our genetic heritage that has allowed us to remain the dominant species on this planet for about 1 million years. Well, maybe less than that, maybe 30,000 to 50,000 years. The reason we manage to survive as a species is because we can adapt, ladies and gentlemen. And good manners is nothing more than adaptability in social situations. If we do not teach our children how to adapt socially, we are basically trying to contravene the built-in adaptability factor that allows us to continue as a species. Walking up to a very large, very ugly thug with a pistol and saying, "Hey, buddy, how the hell are you?" is probably going to get you shot. Thence, you do not survive. Avoiding said thug by hopefully making a turn casually and going somewhere where there are lots of people who can see you is not only courteous, it's life-saving. Showing respect to someone is a good way to diminish the chances that if that someone happens to be a non-visible psychotic killer, that he probably will choose somebody else to vent his rage on. Now, obviously, you cannot teach that to middle school children, because they do not understand that people are not what they look like. Like progressives, they're 12, 13, 14 years old, mentally and emotionally. People are what they look like. Well, we all know that people aren't what they look like. That's one of the reasons Ted Bundy was able to kill so many women, because he certainly wasn't what he looked like. I believe that step number one in repairing the manners deficit is, as I said a few moments ago, any children you interact with, ladies and gentlemen, whether they're your own, your neighbor's kids, kids at Walmart, or this, that, or the other, if they are behaving inappropriately to you, tell them so in as courteous a way as you can. Do not get into an altercation with a parent if you can possibly avoid it, because all that will do, because the parent obviously hasn't matured either, is create a situation where the parent's bad behavior is going to be brought to the fore because their child's bad behavior has been criticized. It isn't easy, and it doesn't have to be your mission in life to walk around Walmart cornering every child who's acting like an idiot and give them a lecture. But when circumstances permit, Use your own good manners and your own good sense and your own adult rationality to let the young person know that the behavior is not appropriate. If you condone it, if you accept it, that young person will assume that it's perfectly fine. My husband and I had an acquaintance whose lady friend had an autistic son. The acquaintance took her and her children to a restaurant. And the autistic child, after playing with his food, got up from their table, walked over to a lady exiting the restaurant, and wiped his dirty hands all over her skirt. She was absolutely incensed, understandably, because the child was like 8 years old. Then the mother came up and said, "Oh, well, he can't help it. He's autistic." Well, the lady immediately, "Oh, that's okay, no problem, poor little thing." Wrong. That's not compassion, ladies and gentlemen. That's pity. That's promoting antisocial behavior that means that that child is going to have an even harder time trying to learn how to behave in social situations than he normally would. And believe me, autistic people have a terrible time trying to learn how to behave. They have to be reminded when behavior is inappropriate, because new behavior patterns in an autistic mind take blasting through concrete to put in place. We have to be, as adults, the teachers of every child with whom we come in contact. But we have to do it in a way that allows them to see that what we are doing is helping them to become more than they are at any given moment. Not just criticizing, not just angry, not just exerting power or control. It's not easy to do, ladies and gentlemen, but anything worth doing is not easy to do. And we have to stop buying into the false compassion of, "Oh, he can't help it," when somebody behaves inappropriately in a situation that we are part of. We can disagree with one another. We can have violently opposite opinions. And I don't mean physical violence. I mean just totally antithetical to one another. But we are a remarkable nation in that with all of our freedom of speech and all the shouting matches we get into when we have political clashes and everything else, generally we don't go home, get our AK-47, come back and kill 30 or 40 people. Mass shootings wouldn't be as newsworthy if they were frequent. They're not. The reason we all get completely shocked and immediately want to ban everything is because they're rare. They're shocking. Something that takes place all the time no longer shocks you. People at Tea Party gatherings, people at marches for civil rights in the 1960s, people peacefully assembling to protest pending legislation on Capitol Hill, aren't mown down by machine gun fire by those who disagree with them. Generally, they don't go back to their car and blow up because somebody secreted an IUD in it. We are a remarkable nation, ladies and gentlemen, because we do use our freedom of speech. But we also understand that our freedom to speak doesn't mean no one else has any freedom to speak. And we also know that when we speak, there is no law that says everybody has to agree with us. This is one of the problems that the current administration and its policies and the last 35 to 40 years in the Department of Education have created. and are exacerbating. Because their idea of freedom of speech is what they consider popular speech, which means any speech which agrees with them. Anyone who has a different opinion should be bullied through the use of the IRS or Homeland Security or the EPA or some other government agency into shutting up because they are, and fill in the blank with any epithet you want, racist, homophobic, you know, right-wing, spiritual militia, you name it. I mean, there are all sorts of names they call us when we don't agree with them. They, too, do not understand manners and appropriate behavior. And that is the kind of climate in which we are raising our kids. It's the kind of climate that those kids are enduring in school. And unfortunately, many of them are having the same climate at home. Because they are not being taught. There are ways to influence people and express your opinion and be listened to that do not include obscenities, name-calling, and threats of physical violence. Now, obviously, there is a line between being polite and being so polite that you get yourself killed. I am not going to be, excuse me, certainly, sir, anything you want, if somebody's got a gun to my head. I'm going to be doing my very, very best to catch him or her off guard, kick them or bend back a little finger or something so I can get the heck away and save my life. But that doesn't mean that I am going to behave that way when I disagree with someone's political views. And it doesn't mean that I am going to sneak up to their house in the dead of night and throw a firebomb through the window of someone whose religion is different from mine. And it doesn't mean that in a meeting, I am going to start cursing everybody because for some reason I didn't get something I was promised. Or threaten to sue a store because I wasn't watching where I was walking, didn't notice the wet floor sign, and fell on my butt. There is always a line between excess and moderation. Unfortunately, in our society right now, excess seems to be the rule rather than the exception. Progressives are basically uttering oxymorons every time they talk. They talk about giving everybody freedom, lots more freedom. But you can only have it if you give up the freedom you already have. And the freedom that you're going to get is the freedom to do what you're told. My friend Linda says what I'm describing is common sense. Of course. And she's also right when she says it's hugely lacking in today's society. She's right about that too. It is. Good manners and appropriate behavior and adapting to circumstances are common sense, ladies and gentlemen. And that good old saw about you catching more flies with honey than you do with vinegar, not that I necessarily want a bunch of flies, but if I'm in the process of trying to get fishing bait, the honey makes better sense. If you want people to pay attention to you, if you want them to see you as someone who has viable ideas and thoughts, who is an admirable person, because everyone wishes to feel that way, then you have to adapt to a certain degree. This is something that most women are better at than most men, and I'm not trying to be sexist here, but women tend to think relationally, and men tend to be linear thinkers. The masculine thinking pattern is more go straight at the dragon with my lance, pierce it to the heart, it's dead and everything's fine. The woman's thinking pattern is, well, if I go around the dragon, come up from behind the dragon with three or four other people, and somebody's out front distracting it, I can shoot it in the backside and it will hurt, turn around, and then the guy with the lance has a better shot and probably won't get killed. Now, that doesn't mean that if you want a bridge built, you need a committee of women, because everybody will be spending so much time deciding what color the rocks underneath it are going to be that the bridge is never going to get halfway across the river. But good manners and courtesy and politeness can get that bridge built. We can treat one another with courtesy, and we can teach our children to do that. And we can also teach them that there is a point at which courtesy is no longer useful. When your livelihood or your life or your family or your country is threatened, that's when you become militant. That's when courtesy goes by the way and it's time to fight for what you believe in and what you love. The greatest generation who did just that were taught courtesy and manners from the time they were toddlers. It certainly didn't make them easy to defeat, ladies and gentlemen. It didn't make them cowards. It didn't make them afraid to speak out for what they believed. It didn't make them afraid to wager their lives to defend this country and its people and its beliefs. I guess the best way that I know to try to change the climate is to try to be the kind of person that you would like to see your children become. Teach by example rather than just precept. One tiny little thing that I do that has a far-reaching effect, and you wouldn't think that it would have this effect. My students in ISS are always addressed by an honorific and their surname. It's Miss or Mr. and last name. Every once in a while, somebody will ask me why I do that. But mostly, they just accept it. And strangely enough, behave a little better than they do in the corridors or in the classroom. I am indicating to them that not only do I expect respect from them, I give it to them as well. It also sets a bit of a distance and indicates, no, I'm not your friend, your BFF, your best buddy, your significant other, your mommy, your daddy, your grammy, your auntie. No, I am a teacher and an adult, and you are not. It creates a degree of formality. We live in a very informal society, ladies and gentlemen. Very informal. Because we can. And there's nothing wrong with informality in its place. But there will be times and places when our children will need to be formal. And they need to learn how to do so reasonably comfortably. This is where appropriate behavior, good manners, and courtesy come in. Have a caller on the line. I think I know who it is. Hello there.
Hi, Terry. It's your California bird.
I knew it was you, dear heart. Recognize the phone number. How you doing, hon?
Hanging in there. It's a great topic today, especially when you talk about the virtues and courtesy, et cetera. And one of the virtues is patience, and mine is running thin with this administration, I got to tell you.
Oh, so, I know, mine too.
And you were correct in saying that when they're tyrannical, you can stop being PC all day long. You have a duty to overthrow this tyranny. We're all looking at that now, of course. We're seeing, and there's a lot of masks coming off and exposés. So I think this is going to play out, and I think the people who are like you and myself and the others, who are patriots and real warriors out here, we're going to stand guard. We're not going to let them take us in shackles off to the FEMA camps.
No,
at least not while we're breathing.
No, so, ma'am. Like I said, courtesy stops where somebody points a gun at me. You know.
Yeah. And you know, some of the things that Glenn talked about, I think it was about a year ago, and he was quite correct, and he was talking about becoming George Washington and people like the founders. Now, we don't live in that formal society anymore, and some of that is, to me, kind of sad that we don't have that, a little bit more of that etiquette inbred, you know, in our society. I know that there are some folks who still definitely carry it on, and those who have been blessed with lots of inheritance money and come from the old families and all that, they definitely hang on to those things. They teach their daughters and sons these virtues, as you are knowing about, and you know, patience, charity, courage, honor. These are things that are to be aspired to, and we should try to instill that in the children and the young people,
mm-hmm.
and ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You
we
know,
have
and like you said, you know, when you deal with it, it's survival and then adaptability, and then you have you know, politeness, and then
mm-hmm.
you have common sense, and
yes.
where to use each one. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so,
one of the biggest problems that I see, Linda, that has been basically undercutting the idea of civility, okay? You know, the mm-hmm. liberal progressives always talk about it, that idiot in the White House, so we want more civility. No, he doesn't. He wants subservience, not civility.
He wants submission, yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
exactly. He wants a yes master, not civility. The reason that civility has been undercut is because we have basically been allowing our children to imbibe from television and radio and advertising mm-hmm. and all this other garbage.
For decades, I know.
The ACLU and the rest of them, that to be oneself means to be uncaring of the effect one's behavior has on others.
Which is actually incorrect. I mean, that's wrong information, yes.
It is,
and
that is an
I know.
Everything
yeah.
they say and do, every time there's a court case, every time there's a discrimination situation, every time the R word is used, every single time, the assumption is, I'm being myself. And I can treat you any way I want because I'm me. Well, no, you can't. It's what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. We have forgotten the practical aspects of the golden rule. If you don't
right.
want crap to happen to you, don't dish crap out to other people.
Yeah, many religions talk about that, yes.
Every single one of them has that rule in some form or another. Believe me, yep. I've studied most of them. They all have.
I know
it.
You have.
And even
the Jewish people say that whatever you wish upon another shall befall you. So that's
exactly correct. Cast your bread upon the waters, and it shall return unto you a hundredfold. Well,
mm-hmm.
karma, okay? Karma
yep.
in the Eastern religions, the Wiccan rule of three. You get back three times what you give out. Every single religious, spiritual, disciplinary, ethical, moral teaching
mm-hmm.
in the history of mankind, as far as we know, has had some version of that idea. What goes around comes around.
Right.
Inevitably, the way you treat other people will rebound and you will get it back. And if you actually try to live that way, you will also accept the fact that somebody can shoot you if you're trying to steal from them.
Right.
Because
right.
you would shoot them if they were stealing your possessions. It's common sense, which is a misnomer because it isn't at all common. It's extraordinarily rare. And everything.
I know.
Common sense and the golden rule underlie every societal set of manners and courtesies and mores. Every single one of them. You
yep.
treat people the way you wish to be treated. And if you really do that, you can't possibly go too far wrong. Unfortunately,
yeah,
because we're human,
right.
not everybody's going to do that. We are not God. We are not perfect.
When I was a bit younger, my friends and I and others in the 70s and 80s would, you know, talking about things when people do people wrong, especially in white-collar crimes, et cetera. We always said, oh, we want karma to be paid in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Karma should be paid in 2 weeks by everybody.
Yes, it should. Exactly. I mean, I'd extend it for 30 days if the person was out of town at the time, you know, that kind of thing. But I want to see the karma get paid back, particularly if I'm the one that got karmatized.
Yes, exactly. That's what we're talking about. I know.
If Lewis Carroll could invent words, so can I.
Exactly. That's true. But at least we can elocute them.
Yes, we can. So far, I haven't committed a spoonerism, but one never knows. I may all of a sudden go senile and start, you know, replacing
exactly.
front ends of words and, you know, coming up with an even more entertaining radio show. But
yes.
I swear, today, I had a microcosmic view of what's fundamentally wrong with our society. I had two kids who couldn't shut up.
Oh.
I had one who was shoved into my ISS room as part of his behavioral improvement plan that I talked about earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that improved was my ability to shout because I had to kick him out.
Oh, isn't that awful?
Yeah, all the other kids were just giggling madly or making horrible comments because he kept flipping the bird at them.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh.
So, like, this is going to improve his behavior. No, he just had a different audience, which is what
yes.
he wants.
The
right. only way
oh,
to improve that behavior is solitary confinement.
That's a shame. I know. Well,
mm-hmm.
look, I watch Fox News and I see these pundits, you know, talking over each other. It's just, it's
uh-huh.
unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The only ones that don't actually do that is Greta Van Susteren and the senators. They have some decorum.
They do.
But
if you think
oh,
they're
my Lord.
Bad, you know, sometimes when I see old Bulls and Bears or one of those other shows or some of the, or the Five,
sure.
although I refuse to watch that because I can't stand Bob Beckel. But anyhow, many of the talk shows or the political commentary shows, I feel like I'm back in the ISS room. I swear.
Oh, of course.
Or
unbelievable.
In a classroom. Because they're all talking at once. Nobody's listening to anybody else. Nobody gets to complete a sentence or a thought.
It's a shouting match. It's absolutely, and the idea, you know, the ideologues, and it's like, it's just constant, it's a push. Like, okay, I've got the bigger mouth, I've got the bigger steamroller, and, you know, I'm going to win this thing.
The Tower of Babel.
It's exactly, it's pretty sad.
Yeah, you know, I really do think that's another analogy that proves my description of liberal progressives as stuck at being 13.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh.
Because
if
you have ever been around a group of kids in that age group, like in the mall or at a McDonald's or whatever,
Lord.
Okay, it sounds like Congress.
A gaggle of baboons, yes. Absolutely.
Pretty much it, yes. Mm-hmm. You got it.
Oh, my
mm-hmm.
gosh.
Mm-hmm. oh,
they're
yeah.
crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed Paul Ryan was pretty ticked off at that McDermott guy, and I was glad he was. What he said was, I could not believe the man
was
saying
that.
Was that
the comment about it? It was all the fault of the Patriot
yes,
groups
yes,
that they got
yes.
audited? Yeah. How
because,
good? Well, if they hadn't,
because
if they hadn't and spoken
anybody,
the truth.
Yeah, anybody in the statist mentality, they absolutely yeah. think, whether they're senator or Congress, they think that whatever you earn belongs to the government. This is the statist mentality, and they're insatiable.
Yeah.
They think that a tax break or a tax this or a fair tax or whatever or an exemption is stealing from the Treasury, and it's not, because it doesn't belong to them. Now, I know that we used to be able to say 100 years ago that the government doesn't create money or jobs. However, they have been able to with their fractional banking and their Bernankes and the Volckers and the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just unbelievable. There is no productivity out of bureaucrats. All it is totalitarianism, regulations, more taxes, and, you know, philosopher king, do as I say, not as I do. You know, that whole deal.
Exactly.
I think people have finally gotten it, Terry. They're ticked off, and they're not going to take
yep.
it anymore.
Yep.
I'm really happy that this is happening.
I have faith in the culture and the ethos and the personalities
right.
of Americans, because we generally are pretty easygoing as a nation and pretty easygoing as a people. Our cultural ethos is live and let live, pretty much, because that's
right.
the way our government is structured. But you push us too far, we get up on
uh-huh.
our hind legs and say, wait a minute, you got to stop.
Yep.
We're
yeah,
not
I'm glad it's happening.
Anymore.
And I've noticed that some of the factions are coming together, and I mean, in a good way, going
mm-hmm.
up against Monsanto. I'm not kidding. Even in California, we had tons of people in Balboa Park, tons of people over
mm-hmm.
on the bridge. And these guys were occupiers, the Occupy San Diego crowd, and
yep.
the greenies, because
yep.
they don't want this. And
exactly.
So I'm like, well, gee, welcome to my world. So,
uh-huh.
Welcome to the party.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's really cool. I'm kind of glad to see it happening.
Well,
people are finally.
It comes back to a lot of what I was talking about tonight, the idea that we can disagree with one another on many, many issues, but
right.
when it comes down to it, usually we've got something in common, even if it's only our humanity. The fact that
we
all want the same things. We all want...
And we want food that's not going to poison us, and we want
exactly.
we don't want eugenicists running around, you know, depopulating
deciding
the Earth.
Deciding who lives and who dies. We
exactly
do not,
like
we
that.
Want,
Cass, the super bilious woman, that's what I call
mm-hmm.
her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can't stand up. Oh, my Lord. We talked about
oh, yeah.
her a couple days ago. Oh,
she gives me a... She makes me nauseous.
Exactly.
She really does.
That's
to
why
the,
I named
that,
her... I renamed her name that.
I like it. Mm-hmm. I like it very much. It's,
thank you.
Oh, supercilious works, too. Mm.
Exactly. I think that
uh-huh.
was Mark Levin's description,
mm-hmm.
but... it's pretty nuts what's going on, and I think what the people are going to have in common is that they do like freedom and they don't want to be oppressed. And once
no, they don't.
Once they see the reality of what this end game of these rotten ones are, they're
mm-hmm.
going to balk like crazy. And hopefully they'll wake up before they're being shoved onto the boxcars. That's
oh,
my fear.
Yeah. Well,
you know.
I think I hope and pray that Agenda 21, the book, doesn't. Predict accurately the coming reality. I like the book very much because it's a good stark view at what could be the upcoming
yeah.
reality.
Oh, yeah.
And I've recommended it to lots of people for that
good.
Reason. It's the character of the American people, all of them, including,
right.
God
right.
love them, the illegal immigrants, because they came here because they wanted something that was American, and not all of them came here for welfare.
Right.
The idea of freedom, real freedom, that has responsibility going along with it, is a powerful draw and has been for
mm-hmm.
over 200 years.
Yes.
It's what we have to sell, if you will. And we don't even
exactly.
have to sell it because people want it. We don't have to advertise it. You don't have to
exactly.
advertise food to a starving man.
Well, the thing is, it's got, the Leviathan has gotten so big and gargantuan, and you know that in our
mm-hmm.
bureaucracy and the federal government, which it never should have been, and we've allowed it, and we've got to put the brakes on it and reverse it, as far as I'm concerned.
And it's hard to stop
opinion.
A behemoth. It's hard
it
to
is.
Stop a behemoth. I mean, standing in front of a freight train, waving your fingers, you know, when the guy driving
got,
it doesn't want to put on
got
the brake.
Yeah, they've got the technology. They've got quite a few dumbed-down populace. They've got
mm-hmm.
everything in place. They've got the machinery, you know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? And
mm-hmm.
and it's been coming down the pike for a long, long time, Terry. You know this as
oh,
well
yes.
as anyone. And
yep.
So they're ready to pull a switch. And I'm telling you, since they have not succeeded in taking away my weapons, and they will not while I'm breathing, then I think we've got a shot. Because people will say, no, we're not doing this. We're not playing this game. You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's what's going to happen. And I think they're going to mm-hmm. force us into it. If they keep doing this with the drones and the NSA and the taking the Verizon
mm-hmm.
phone stuff
yeah.
and the
oh,
the
yeah. Stuff,
I mean, gee, many gods, it's just on and on and on. But I'm glad
well,
it's being exposed.
They'd be very bored by tracing my calls because I think I probably make 3 a month on my cell phone and I don't have
yeah.
Verizon at home.
Here's the thing. Yeah, I don't have a Verizon phone, thank God, but I do call the radio show, and they can capture anything they want. They don't
yeah.
just need to do. Come on, they've got the technology to tap anything, and you know they're doing it.
Well,
so,
of course. Well, given the fact that I'm hosting this show, I'm not exactly shy, Linda. They can hear it. All they got to do is tune in. You know, it's not like I'm trying to keep it a secret. And the same way at school, I don't discuss politics in front of the children because
right,
I don't.
Right.
That is not my function. That and,
right.
and the age group that I deal with, all they're doing is parroting whatever their parents talk about. Anyway,
sure.
they're not old
Absolutely.
Enough yet to think for themselves.
They
My
can,
job
yeah.
is to give them the tools so that eventually, with a little luck, if they
right.
have a functioning brain, they'll learn how to use it. You know, there are days when I don't think any of them will, but then again, I always remember that sooner or later, somebody's going to come back if I live long enough and tell me, you know something, Mrs. Rowland, you were right, because I've had it happen before.
Yes.
And what can happen once can happen again. So
That's
that gives
right.
me an edge over a lot of the younger teachers, the ones in their 20s and 30s, and even
sure.
the ones in their 40s, because they're not old enough yet to have had somebody come back 20 years later
That's
and say,
true.
You know, I learned something from you. So
it's a great feeling.
It really is. One of the reasons why we say that age confers wisdom, it isn't necessarily that you get wiser as you get older, you just get more experience.
That's true. Absolutely. I think in the eyes of God, we're still little munchkins. We certainly haven't figured it out yet.
We certainly are. You know, the one thing that helps me deal with the loss of my beloved is he knows now. He knows. And one of the things that, for him, the most important thing was always to know.
Right, right.
And I guess that's one of the reasons why we were such a good match.
Oh, that's great. That is so cool. So,
yeah, it's, that's pretty much it. Obviously, I miss my biggest fan, and I always close with sending in my love, and I always will. But
good for you.
If nothing else,
absolutely,
what I try to get across to my kids is the same kind of, I guess you could say, inner balance point that I have had to find for myself through a lot of very tough times.
Sure.
And they're fragile. Believe me, they don't look fragile. A basket of six-month-old puppies doesn't look fragile either, but they are. They're very fragile. They need structure. They need a framework within which to grow into what they will be. And when we take the framework away and treat them as if they were adults while still telling them they're children, we destroy their actual real benefit of childhood and make them dysfunctional adults.
And also you create little monsters because, you know, when you have an immature brain inside of a body that can do someone harm, that is not a good recipe.
Exactly correct, my dear. I do like my canine analogies when I talk about kids because it fits. You don't train a puppy the way we are training our children. Because if you do train the puppy the way we're training our children right now, he's going to pee in your living room his whole life.
And turn on you. Oh, and that
exactly
will happen.
And poop in the middle of your bed, too. Because you've never told him he shouldn't do that.
Exactly.
In a way that he understands. Children.
I'm going to let you wrap it up, and thank you so much for taking the call.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
Enjoy. Yeah, it was a good topic today. Thank you,
ma'am. Have a good evening.
God bless. Bye.
You too, sweetie. Bye-bye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was my dear friend Linda, that California bird of paradise, that rare creature indeed, rara avis, as they say in Latin, the California conservative. And she is one of my heroes, ladies and gentlemen, because she does stand up for what she believes. And she also has courtesy and good manners and can fit into any company and shine therein. This is what I'd like to see our children become. I want them to be the kind of people that were I a child and they an adult, I could look up to as a real role model. I can't guarantee that they will become that. No one can. All I can do is to do my best to give them the kind of tools that hopefully will get them to that state. Whether or not I'll be successful, I may never know. I may never find out whether or not what I have said and what I have taught has penetrated or made a difference. But because I cannot know what will happen 60 years from now is no reason for me not to try. And it's no reason for the parent of any child not to try. Thank you for being with us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Join us again next week for Patriot Education. All my love to my greatest fan. Good night and God bless to everyone.
Blog Talk Radio and Patriot Family is where you need to be if you want to be informed and inspired 5 days a week. On Monday at 7:30 p.m., you can listen to the Constitution Hour. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Right from the Left Coast. On Thursday at 6 p.m., you can listen to Patriot Education. And on Friday at 7 p.m., you can listen to Exposed but Never Forgotten. All times are Eastern Standard Time. Hope to see you there.